Today we are continuing in the Shar HaBusha. We left off, we sort of ran through the end of the last paragraph. We started to discuss very bad kinds of busha. I mean, we're talking about how busha could be a very positive midah, but busha could also be very negative if used in the wrong way. So we were discussing how very often a person is made to feel embarrassed if he doesn't participate in an avera, or very often a person is made to feel embarrassed if he participates in a mitzvah that's not a popular mitzvah. It's not one of the mitzvahs that people enjoy doing in his community, or that people view as something that's an important mitzvah in his community. So he's made to feel a sense of busha, so a person has to overcome that busha. A person has to, you know, if people don't make bracha achrona or whatever in his community, because come on, you know, if you bench on Shabbos, you know, and that's and then he doesn't. So one of my chaverim told me, another rebbe used to teach in TRS, said that growing up he never knew that you're supposed to bench during the week, like bench on Shabbos. That's what you do. I don't know. I wasn't brought up that way. I don't know. But if that's the way people are made to feel, so then you have to overcome that busha and do what's right and make all the bracha achronas, the bar nefashos and the alamich, everything in the right place, and do all the mitzvahs properly. And then he went on to say that one of the most difficult mitzvahs to perform, because of the inherent busha in doing the mitzvah, is the mitzvah of tochcha. That if a person is misbayish lochiach b'nei adam, savos lem alatov, a person is embarrassed to give tochcha to someone, to let them know how to do something better, to improve their lives. So that's not a good busha, because there's a mitzvah to try to give tochcha. There's also an art of giving tochcha. It has to be done in the proper way. A lot of times we just want to take a live and let live attitude. I'll do my thing, he'll do his thing, respect everybody, let everybody do their own thing. But that's not really the Torah's attitude. The Torah's attitude is that we're supposed to try to spread Torah and mitzvot as much as possible. And if we see someone that has certain failings in Torah and mitzvot, and we have the ability to influence them, so we have to use that influence. We have to use that capital that we have. Sometimes we have relationships with people where we built up a certain capital where we're able to speak to them in a way that other people, maybe they wouldn't be so receptive from other people. But we're embarrassed. We don't want to. We have a busha. We don't want to mention anything to them. It's easy for me to say I'm in a position where I'm a rabbi, where it's assumed that the rabbi is supposed to tell the talmidim how to behave properly in a nice kind of way, and you know, give musar to the balabatim and tell them that. But really, it's a mitzvah on everybody. It's not just a mitzvah on rabbis. I once had a situation. I once had a story. It's really, you know, whenever I talk about chayach tochiach, I always think back to this instance. There was a fellow in my shul who, every time he's a big, strong guy, really, you know, when we were in high school together, was like the best athlete, was always like, you know, a very cool guy. And so when he went bald very early, so it's like, pasnish, you know, such a cool guy to go bald. So when he got a haircut, he shaved his head, you know, because like Michael Jordan, right? You know why Michael Jordan shaved his head? Because Superman's not supposed to go bald. So he was going bald. So he shaved his head. He took control of it, right? And that's so it's fine for Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan's not Jewish. But when a Jew shaves their head, they're violating the mitzvah of the Isser of Bal Takifu, that they're being makif peos harosh. You're not allowed to cut off the peos harosh. So he would shave his head. And I was thinking that this is a violation of peos harosh. Very from guy, learned in a very good yeshiva for, in Eretz Yisrael and in YU, and very good shiurim, and a guy who says shiurim. So I thought, like, I should probably say something to him. But I was nervous to say something to him, because it's like a very sensitive thing. You tell someone that, you know, you're violating an issur with your haircut. But it was happening every single month. You'd get a haircut. Every few weeks you'd get a haircut. He'd shave off his head. So he'd shave off the hair on his head. So I went to him on Lag BaOmer, about a couple of days before Lag BaOmer, because I knew Lag BaOmer was coming up. He was going to get a haircut. So I said to him a couple of days before Lag BaOmer, you know, I have to look into it. Maybe Akavas Kala Rosh is different, but I think maybe it's something we need to look into about, you know, about whether that shaving your head is a violation of Los Akifu. So he got very upset at me. He said, maybe it's a violation. He said, you're the rabbi. You're supposed to, you know, if I'm doing something wrong, tell me I'm doing something wrong. And if I'm not doing something wrong, then, you know, mind your own business. So don't tell me maybe it's a violation. Why don't you do your research? Figure out whether it is a violation. I'm like, it is, you know, but I didn't. So, you know, then come back to me. So I did a little more research on the topic, and there's a machlokas rishonim whether a kafas kala rosh, if you shave off all your hair and you don't just shave off the sides of your hair, whether that's an issur d'oraisa or an issur d'rabbanan. But it definitely is asur. The Gemara says in Maseches Nazir Daf Nun Ches that it's asur, but there are shitos about how long the hair has to remain. Some shitos say it has to remain long enough that you could hold on to it, that you could grab it. Other shitos say long enough that you could bend it. You know, for the head, the tip of the hair to the root, and Rav Salvechik held, Rav Shechter writes in Efsharav that it only needs to be long enough that it can catch in your fingernail, that you can actually feel it with your fingernail, like the stubble on my face right now is long enough that I could do that. So it could be very, very short. So there are these different shittos about how short it could be. So you can get a one, and it would still be enough to satisfy Rav Salvechik's opinion. Plus, there's the Shulchan Aruch Paskins that Meikar Adin, it's only an Isser if you use a razor to shave your head. Just like shaving the beard is only an Isser with a razor, shaving the pay, Shulchan Aruch says Meikar Adin, he says we should be machmel like the other Shitos, and the right thing to do is to be machmel like the other Shitos. But Meikar Adin, like the Shitos Arambam, is using razors. So I went to this fellow the morning of Lag Bomer, I gave him a packet of Marmakomos, so as I said, he's a guy who knows how to learn. I gave him a packet of Marmakomos, I said, first of all, many Rishonim hold that it's only an Isser Drabanan to do a kavas kol rosh. Second of all, maybe it's maker I didn't. It's only asur with a razor. It's just a shulchan aruch recommends to be mechmir. And third, you have Rav Salvechik who said that you could even get a one. So I said, what I would be most comfortable with is if you got a two. You know, that would definitely satisfy all opinions. But if you get a one, that you definitely have what to be somechan. So you know. Thank you very much. You know, he wasn't particularly thrilled with me, and he took the marmakomos, put them in his pocket. 2 hours later, DRS was on a Lag BaOmer trip. I remember I was in Grant Park before they renovated it a long time ago. And I got a call, this must have been 10 years ago. I got a call from the guy, Rabbi, I owe you 1,000 brachos. Why do you owe me 1,000 brachos? He says, you just saved me from the most embarrassing situation, potentially what could have been the most embarrassing situation. So what happened? He said, well, right after davening, I saw him at shul that morning, I gave him our makamos. He said, right after davening, I took my sons, we went for a haircut. And I told the guy to give me a one, you know, to one on the whole head. And I had my sons with me, and they, you know, with their yarmulkes and the tzitzis, and, you know, they look like from kids. And a guy at the barbershop, and this could only happen in New York, but this would never happen anywhere else, a guy from the barbershop is sitting in the barbershop, starts yelling at me, saying, you shake it. What are you doing? You have these young children that you sent to yeshiva, and then you shave your head like this, where you cut off your payas. What's wrong with you? How could you get such a haircut when you have children that you sent to yeshiva? The guy starts berating him and yelling at him in the barbershop. So he said, I calmly said, well, actually, according to many Rishonim, Hakafas Kol Rosh is only Drabanan, and the Rosh Shittas Rambam, which we pass on like Mikra Adin Shulchan Aruch, is that it's only Asur with the razor, and I'm not using a razor over here, but even what the Shulchan Aruch recommends, that you don't shave off your head entirely, but the Rav Salvechik holds that it's only has to be long enough that you can feel the hair with your fingernail. So I think I have what to be somechan, and if you're interested in studying more about it, I have some Marmakamas for you, and he hands the guy the Marmakamas. He had gone straight from shul to the barber. He said, the guy, had I not had that whole experience, that whole exchange, I would have been humiliated in front of my children. I would have had nothing to say. The guy would be yelling at me that I'm violating all sorts of Yisurim, everything. What's Mefurish and Shulchan Aruch, according to this guy? And I would have had no idea. Sometimes the mitzvah of Toch pays off. You do the mitzvah, you set someone straight. You try to improve their behaviors. Again, you have to do it in a sensitive way, and you have to do it properly. But it's a mitzvah. It's not the most comfortable mitzvah, but it's certainly a mitzvah. And then he had said, again, this is still going on the paragraph we read last time, where the Orch Sadikim writes that another type of busha that's a bad busha is if someone is sitting in front of a Rebbe, he's sitting in a shir and he's learning Torah, and he's misbayesh lishol masha ene yodea. He's embarrassed to ask what he doesn't know. Now, in my experience, that happens for two reasons, that a person is embarrassed to ask questions. One reason that a person might be embarrassed to ask questions is that a person is not intellectually gifted, and they feel that they, whenever they talk, the other kids in the class are smirking or making fun of them, or that they're going to say something stupid. And you know, because every time they always say something, it's always a stupid question. There was always they were always made to feel that their questions were stupid, so they ultimately just close up and they don't want to ask questions. I think that is the less common of the two reasons that people are embarrassed to ask questions. I think the more common, at least nowadays, of the reasons that people are embarrassed to ask questions is that it's the opposite. A person his whole life was told how smart he is. And he was told, you're a great student, and you're brilliant, and you're so smart, you're so smart, you're so smart, you're so smart. So if a person is told, and his identity is, that he's so smart, so if he asks a question, and it turns out to be a stupid question, it's not just that he asked a stupid question, so he asked something that's, you know, that's not the most brilliant question. It hits at his very identity. I mean, he identifies, I'm a smart kid. So how could a smart kid ask a stupid question? And that causes him a great deal of busha. So a person doesn't want to ask questions. They just pretend that they understand everything, that they know everything, even though they don't understand everything. Because when it comes to learning, very often, I mean, it's not just learning Torah, learning anything. Very often, people and all the psychologists have come to this recognition in the last decade or so that there was, when I was a kid, there was a big movement called the self-esteem movement. That everything was about building up kids' self-esteem. But, and it's true, it's very important that people have self-esteem, that they be comfortable in their own skin, that they feel confident in themselves, and they shouldn't just go with the flow with whatever their friends are doing, and they should feel like they can make their own decisions. But people didn't know how to do it. The way people were building kids' self-esteem was telling them how talented they are, how great they are, how smart they are, things that are fixed traits, where they come to define themselves. So a kid would strike out in a little league, and the father would say, "You did great!" So what's the kid thinking? Either my father's an idiot because he doesn't know that striking out is not doing great, or that it's someone else's fault, but I'm really great, and it's someone else's fault, the ump, you know, the bad call or whatever, and it's someone else's fault, but I'm really great. And what's he not going to do is he's not going to work harder. He's not going to work on his game at all to try to get better. So he will never get better at hitting a baseball because he's not interested in getting better. He doesn't think that he needs to get better because he's great. He's already great. So he's either going to give up or he's just going to continue to fool himself into thinking that he's great. So people were, a whole generation of kids were raised on being told how smart they are, how great they are, how talented they are, how good looking they are, all these things that are fixed traits which don't encourage growth. But the real way to build self-esteem is to complement effort. That was a great effort. Let's work harder next time. I mean, the kid strikes out. Father says, "Okay, let's practice. Let's do better next time. You tried hard now. We're going to try even harder. We're going to keep on trying until you succeed." Not to be negative about it. You stink. You're never going to be anything. That would be terrible. That would destroy the kid's self-esteem. But to be in a positive way. So a lot of times people think that if they identify themselves as the smart person, well, they can't ask a question because then it's going to be embarrassing if I ask a question that doesn't fit with my identity as a smart person. I'm supposed to be the smart one. But a Ben Torah who wants to grow, someone who's going to grow in learning, Lo Abayshin Lamed, means that a person can't be embarrassed if he wants to really learn. He has to be growth-oriented. And he has to realize that, yes, sometimes you suffer the indignity of asking something that turns out to be obvious. Or, you know, the Rebbe says, "Does anyone know this?" And you're going to scream out, and you're going to say, "Oh," and you're going to, and you'll be wrong sometimes. And it's not the end of the world if you're wrong. It's okay to try and to, as long as you keep on trying and you keep on asking and you keep on searching for the MS, and that's ultimately how a person grows. I could tell you from my high school years, I remember there were many, many classmates that I had who were known as the smartest kids in the class, and not much became of them. They didn't become, you know, as great as we had. The other night we had Rabbi Yehuda Willig. He's a notable exception. He was someone who was very smart in high school, but he was such a nanav that he knew that he always had to work and work and work. That's how I introduced him. That's why I mentioned him. That was what was so impressive about him. It wasn't that he was gifted, that he was smart. Of course, he was Rabbi Willig's son. Okay, so he's genetically, he has a certain advantage, obviously. But he worked and worked and worked and continued to work with Hasmada Atzuma, with tremendous Hasmada, to become who he has become. And a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people just, they take their identity, okay, I don't have to study because I'm smart, I don't have to work because I'm smart, and then they end up not becoming anything great, and people who were not nearly as gifted as them work and practice and become better and better and better, and ultimately accomplish much more than people who were, you know, who were smarter originally. So that's law of Baishal Named. A person shouldn't have busha. A person should always know to ask questions. So further on now, Chassid, we're starting the paragraph of Chassid. Chassid Nikra al Shema Busha. Well, Chassid is called by busha, meaning busha is an identifying characteristic of a Chassid. It's a way to achieve Chassidus. How? Ki Chassid Vashon Lavanhu. The word chassid is very closely associated with lavan, with being white. Ki targuma shel v'hachassida, the targum unklus on the word hachassida, hu chavarisa. And chavarta, chavarisa, is white. Uksiv v'lo atapanav yechavaru, v'targuma shel cherpa hu chisuda. And the targum of cherpa is also chisuda, is chassid. So chassid means white, chassid means busha, means cherpa. So if chassid means white and chassid means busha, so you see that busha is associated with chassid, and chassid is associated with white. All three are together. What does white have to do with busha? What does the color white have to do with busha? So what do we call it when you embarrass someone publicly? Right. Why is it malbin p'nei chaver? It's lavan. It's lashem. His face turns white because he's mortified. When a person is a little embarrassed, their face turns red. When a person is mortified, like the blood drains from the face and they just become like white, like a ghost. So that's malbin p'nei chaver b'rabim. It's a lashem of white. Busha is associated with the colored white. With the color white. The kol zel lama. Why is it that busha leads to chassidus? Because on the path to chassidus, the Orcha Tzaddikim is about to suggest, there are going to be bumps in the road of significant busha. The path to chassidus is not a smooth path. It is not a smooth road. It's not just a straight line. There are going to be ups and downs. There are going to be moments where a person feels an intense busha in order to achieve chassidus. Ki a chassid tzarech lispol busha kedei lekayim es haTorah. A chassid has to tolerate and put up with busha in order to properly fulfill the Torah. V'tzarech lahav yirmei al panav habusha b'mekom mitzvah. And he has to somehow overcome busha in a place of a mitzvah when it comes time to do a mitzvah. So maybe embarrassing to do the mitzvah properly, but he has to do that. If he's amongst chaverim and they're speaking lashon hara, it's embarrassing to leave the conversation or to say, you know, to shift the conversation or to do something like that. It's embarrassing. But in order to achieve chassidus, that's what a person sometimes has to do. Rav Targin was talking last night how Rav Aaron Lichtenstein would call out the tekios. Most people would be like, you know, you try to sound cool when you're doing it. You want to sound in a way that everyone, that sounds normal. But if a person is just, you know, he has the passion of, and this fire of Avas Hashem, so sometimes letting that out could be embarrassing. But nevertheless, that's what he has to do in order to achieve his chassidus. Va'oz nikra chassid. Then it will become a chassid, and through chassidus, a person achieves nevuah. Kedchsiv az dibarta v'chazon lachassidecha. That Hashem speaks in a vision to his chassid. So if busha leads chassidus, chassidus leads to a chazon. It leads to a vision of nevuah. V'yagia bevashtoli de yirashamayim. And a person through busha can achieve yirashamayim. Kedchsiv u'ba'avur tia yirasa al penechem levilti sechta'u. The pasuk says that your Yira will be on your face. What does it mean? How does Yira appear on a person's face? Ezu Yira shinikaris alpanim. What kind of Yira appears on a person's face? So the Gemara says, Aviomer za busha. That's a reference to busha. That busha is a good midah, and it's a midah that sometimes is going to encourage a person for future growth and will lead him to an enhanced sense of Yira Shemayim. Now the idea that a person is a chassid has to suffer some indignities along the way is self-evident, and it's really part of the larger reality in life that in order to achieve anything great, a person has to suffer a little bit. That Rabbi Yechiel Levinman, one of the Rebbeim DRS, always says that, you know, it's like an EKG machine. You know, if there's a straight line, then that means a person's dead, right? You need some ups and downs. ups and downs are a good thing. That's a sign of life. So it's a good mashal that in life, if a person is living a vibrant life, if a person is living a life where there's growth, so there are going to be ups and downs, and he has to be able to get through the downs in life and to be able to not let the downs destroy him and ruin him, and use it very often as a motivation, kisheva yibol tzadik v'kab, that use it as a motivation to achieve more, to become greater. We mentioned Michael Jordan before, right? How much of his success does he attribute to getting cut from his varsity basketball team as a freshman? He made it as a sophomore and started, you know, like how many people, but like he took that as like this tremendous hit to who he was, and it motivated him to work harder and to become, I remember when they cloned the first sheep, New York Times was doing all sorts of stories about cloning and the potential, you know, of what if they would just take Michael Jordan and clone him, and like how horrible would the NBA be then? Like everyone would just be the same. There would just be a bunch of Michael Jordans running around. So people made the point that no, there wouldn't. There would still only be one, because there would only be one who gets cut from his varsity basketball team. And it's the greatness is not from the inherent talent. There are people that are more talented. There was a guy that was known as a great talent. He was going to be better than Michael Jordan. Derek Coleman, who was picked second by the Nets, second overall in the draft. He was going to be a super duper star. But he was fat and out of shape, and you know, he was like, notoriously bad at practice and didn't work hard. And that's what happens. The talent alone is not gonna do it. A person has to suffer indignities in life that will motivate him, that will cause him to want to become greater, not to crush him, to motivate him. So on the path to chassidus, on the path to greatness in Torah as well, a person has to suffer some busha along the way, but ultimately that's what's going to make him stronger in his avodas Hashem. Okay, going to read one little paragraph. We'll pick up the Yizar Mo'ov tomorrow.